Deconstructed Construction Podcast. Here we go. Deconstructed Construction, the podcast where we talk about calling and whatever else is on our mind.
Start this up then. Okay, hey everyone. This is our first podcast that we're doing on the Deconstructing Conlanging blog. So welcome to the Deconstructed Construction Podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Jordan.
I am Nick.
And I'm Tommy.
Okay, and we do have another contributor, but I haven't heard from Cody in like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, so he is not here for this. But maybe on the next one. Yeah, it's very unfortunate.
Well, he can always come on a different one, I guess.
Yeah, first.
True. A belated introduction would work.
So I think we're going to start this one up just by giving a quick explanation for why we created this blog in general. Basically, all three of us are conlangers, obviously. And are studying, I know Nick and Tommy, you guys are actually studying linguistics.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I go to Notre Dame, but they don't have a linguistics major. So the next best thing I get is Romance Languages and Linguistic Anthropology, which is close.
Close enough.
But yeah, so it works for me, and I work in the psycholinguistics lab, so it's all good. So we're all linguists, conlangers. To an extent.
Or at least aspiring to be.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. More aspiring, but
yeah.
One day.
One day. I haven't taken any actual linguistics courses yet because I'm only a freshman.
Yeah.
So I haven't gotten into my major yet. I'm still doing the like gen eds, but so all the things that I know, which I've just learned on my own, so.
Yeah, I find that a lot of conlangers are really self-studiers more than taking classes. Like, I know so much more from my self-study than I have from my classes.
Definitely.
I'm actually taking my first one for my major, which is weird. Starting off with neurolinguistics, weird.
Yeah, definitely. Everything I know from linguistics, I basically know from two things, conlanging and reading Steven Pinker's books. But... yeah, so basically we're all conlangers, and I started up the blog and then put out posts looking for contributors, but basically realized as a beginning conlanger, there's not a lot of resources out there for you that explain in a simple way without trying to use that many linguistics terms or special vocabulary. Why different ways to conlang. So, you know, there's the language construction kit, which you find on Zompist, and there's the Language Creation Society, and these are all, you know, great places to go. There's ZBB, and apparently DeviantArt has a pretty good conlanging scene. But a lot of these, they say they're for beginners, but it's pretty hard to actually, you know, get into it and understand. So basically what we're trying to do is give a kind of step-by-step or beginner introduction to conlanging. Is there anything else I'm missing, guys?
I think the main problem of why there aren't many places that are for beginners, even though there are places that say they're for beginners, is because they start out with a group of beginners, but then they get a bit higher up in level. And they forget to be accessible for the beginners.
Right.
Exactly.
Especially on forums, places like the ZBB, you don't even go in there unless you know how to gloss, you know IPA.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
Also, like, the conlang listserv.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
Definitely not for newbies. So this is basically a blog for, well, newbies, not just newbies, though. I mean, I'm sure, you know, veteran or, you know, just people like us who do it for fun, could definitely find something of enjoyment in the blog. Especially we have posts like, you know, Nick's doing historical conlanging and things like that. So definitely not just for newbies, but that's one of our primary focuses.
To make it accessible for everybody. Right.
Yep.
So I think the next topic of business for this podcast, we're just going to give you a quick introduction to each of our experiences, how, why, when we got into conlanging and linguistics. So I guess I'll start. So I grew up in a completely English-speaking household. No one was bilingual. None of my family was, except for on my father's side, they're Italian. My great-grandma came over from Bari in Apulia, which is in the south of Italy. And they came over in the 20s, 30s. And she spoke Italian, and my grandpa knew phrases, but it kind of got lost. There was that lost generation where, you know, they wanted to speak English to blend into the society. So our family was English speaking completely. But if you ask anyone that knew me, I was, you know, always talking, always reading, writing, yeah, doing things with language. That's always been an interest to me. And unfortunately, where I went to middle school, elementary school, we didn't have foreign language. I know a lot of people these days are getting, even some are getting foreign languages even as young as elementary school. But I started taking Spanish in high school, and I fell in love. Today, Spanish is still my favorite language I speak. So, a mí me encanta el español. And from that Spanish, you know, from falling in love with Spanish, it just kind of carried over. And I started, you know, looking at other languages, looking at what other languages could I learn, looking at linguistics topics, going around, and coming to Notre Dame, I knew I wanted to, you know, study or major in Spanish, definitely. But since then, I've added Italian and Basque and Catalan. So Romance languages are definitely my area of specialty.
Romance languages plus Basque.
Yeah, plus, don't ask me how Basque fits in there. It's thrown in there. I actually just had someone comment on my Tumblr, my personal one, the other day saying, I've noticed that a lot of your posts are including regional languages of Spain. Are you just learning all of them? You should definitely check out Galician. And I was like,
oh, yes, no. Galician.
I totally just noticed. Yeah, I kind of am doing that. I got the Basque, the Catalan, the Castellano. So I have to add Galician to my list. But yeah, Romance languages are my thing. And I also got to, this is my first year in Notre Dame, and I got a really great opportunity. I work in the psycholinguistics lab, which, if you don't know what that is, that's basically the psychology of linguistics. So, you know, how language affects your brain, how you process language, language acquisition, things like that. It's a really great experience. I highly recommend anyone who is at a university where they do research, highly recommend getting into it. That's actually how I got into conlanging, was through in the psycholinguistics lab. We were talking, and I mean, I'm a freshman, and there's two grad students. The professor, who has a doctorate, obviously, that runs the lab, and then three other undergrads that are all psychology majors. So I'm the only one that's not a psych major. So I didn't, they've also been working there for years, so like I was a little behind. So she told me, she being Professor Kathleen Eberhard, she told me to check out some of Steven Pinker's books, and maybe look into just, you know, studying up on linguistics. But from there, I'd seen stuff online about conlanging, you know, obviously James Cameron's Avatar with Na'vi and you know, Klingon, things like that, Esperanto. So I started, you know, doing conlanging as a way to learn more about linguistics, to sort of self-study in an interesting way. So, you know, it was just a way for me to employ what I was learning about linguistics on my own, in a way that made not only made me remember it, but that was also, you know, fun and enjoyable to do. And I know there's a lot of people, especially on, you know, like the ZBB, I don't know about Nick or Tommy, but that's one of the reasons why they got into conlanging was, you know, to learn about linguistics. But
yeah.
Yeah, I find that's a common thing, either that or the other way around.
Right.
I don't know why, but one always leads to the other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're pretty tied in. You'll realize that if you're a conlanger, you'll somewhat turn into an amateur linguist, and might not always work the other way, but I definitely know a lot of people that study linguistics that also conlang to whatever extent. But yeah, that's basically how I got into conlanging. I just started, you know, looking at different languages, different things they employ to convey different things. And from there, I mean, my first few conlangs were, you know, heavily inspired. I wouldn't say they're relexes, which is, in conlang terms, that's a conlang that's heavily, how would you describe it? I guess it's heavily based on either your mother tongue or a language that you're
yeah, kind of like almost copied.
Yeah.
Like just put things in spaces, right. Sort of.
It would be like if you took English syntax and grammar, morphology, and just changed words, but you still like formed tenses the same, you still... things like that, that would be considered a relex, but...
It's incredibly common for newbies to have that as their first thing.
Relexes, like, or kitchen sink conlangs, which are basically conlangs that have a ridiculous amount of irregularity and things like anything
you've
learned.
Just features, any feature thrown in. It's everything but the kitchen sink in the conlang. Although I find that tends to be their second conlang, which is really weird.
It usually goes relax, kitchen sink, because once you get to your second conlang, you're like, okay, I know stuff, sweet.
Let's use all of it.
Right.
Use all the things.
Yeah, but my first conlangs were, you know, heavily influenced, not on English. I actually despise the English language. That sounds horrible, but not
that's okay.
To me, it's
people really understand the sentiment if they're learning a language.
Yeah, I find Spanish, Italian, Latin, Catalan, they're like acoustically, phonologically more pretty in my opinion, pleasing to the ear, and I just think you can express so much more in those languages.
It's just how you want to express things, though.
Right.
Before anybody kills us for saying that English isn't amazing.
Right. I'm by
no. It's just how you want
by
to
no means
view it.
A prescriptivist or anything. I'm just saying English is. It is my mother tongue, but it's by no means my first love linguistically. But yeah, my first conlangs were based a lot on Romance languages, you know, Romance phonology and syntax. But since then, I've kind of been stepping away. I know if you've been following up with the blog, we've been doing the Birth of a Conlang series, which was, you can kind of see Romance influences in it, but there's definitely some steps away from it. And I did that A for easiness. Conlang, you know, Romance languages have extremely easy phonologies, so it's pretty simple to get. But I've gotten away from that, thank God. so I know I just sent Tommy a phonology that I'm working on for a new conlang, which is it's my next project. So I'm probably gonna start putting that up on the blog as another Birth of a Conlang 2, I think, to go a little bit more in-depth to the reasons why. But before I pass it to Nick and Tommy, one thing I forgot to say, my primary areas of interest in linguistics are morphology, dialectology, language acquisition, and historical linguistics. Those are kind of all over the board. But definitely dialectology and verb morphology are my two primary areas of interest. I'm actually hoping to do a case study in Argentina in the next coming years about Rioplatanese Spanish, which, if you don't know, is a lot different than you know, Castilian Spanish or Mexican Spanish or anything like that. Spanish has a large amount of dialects like any Romance language, so... those are my main areas of interest in case you guys were wondering about that. But I'll pass it to Tommy or Nick to tell you about themselves.
I guess I will pick it up now. Anyway, it kind of started with me with language, at least, because I grew up in a semi-bilingual household, not completely bilingual. It was mostly English speaking, but because my grandparents on my maternal side had immigrated from Spain in like the 40s, and I think my grandmother came a little bit afterwards, they spoke Spanish, and especially my grandmother was more comfortable is the right word, in Spanish. So she would definitely talk to my mother in Spanish. So I ended up getting only or mainly a passive understanding of Spanish. Like I could understand it, but I really didn't speak it because everybody let me say English to them. So
that's how languages die, guys. We gotta stop that.
That's how you assimilate into society.
Fair enough.
But I had a weird school district, and we started Spanish in the beginning in kindergarten. So I had that up until fifth grade when I moved, and then I had nothing for a while. And I'm just like, okay, let's English now. English is cool. We use English everywhere. And then I didn't get back into Spanish for a while until like ninth grade, I want to say. And then I just kept taking it. So I got comfortable in Spanish, but then at one point I honestly, this is gonna sound like the weirdest origin story for a conlang. I was born in math class. So I decided to put things together and just mess around with the language.
That sounds like my memories of middle school.
Conlangs in math class. So I came up with
I did it in history class.
My first and only language I have made further than a sketch stage, which is Anicle, and it's gone through many incarnations over the past 4+ years. I don't even know how long, over 4 years, at least. I think I actually may have started in eighth grade, I'm not sure. That's one of the two. But
it's a long time though.
And then working on that, of course, I had to know more linguistics to understand what people are saying online.
Indeed.
Had to like learn IPA and stuff like that. So the more I learned about that to make my conlang, which had started in math class, the more I really got into that and got into languages and started looking into other languages. All across the board, mind you. Not just like in one language family or anything. I don't know. I just had interest in everything. And
that's the same way that I was.
I ended up deciding to go for linguistics because it was something that I was really passionate about, separate from my conlanging at one point, even though they kind of fed into each other. Like the more I learned about one thing, the more I wanted to do the other thing and I wanted to put them together. So I ended up continuing with my self-study of linguistics and doing whatever with my conlanging and developing my conlang until I just decided one day that I was going to learn Finnish because I really liked it and I wanted to learn it, but I'm just like, sorry, I was not like Siren, but I just really liked how it sounded and I liked how it formed together.
How long have you been learning Finnish?
About 2 years, but I'm still at a beginner stage.
I don't blame you. That's a tough language.
Because I'm doing mainly an input rather than traditional learning methods.
Yeah, Finnish is really interesting. All I know is hyvä huomenta, I think. Good morning?
Good morning.
I don't know.
Languages to learn. Even if you're an English, I mean, it's a Germanic language, right?
It's not a Germanic language. It's an Uralic language.
Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, I would always say like your girl. Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Uralic.
It's sort of similar to Hungarian, right?
Yeah, same family.
Sort of an Estonian, maybe.
Yep, same family. Yeah.
That's what
it's
I know.
not Indo-European at all, which
yeah,
is
it's,
completely
yeah.
new.
Isn't it notorious for its cases, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have 16?
Yes.
16?
15.
15.
So as I was studying that, I started getting really into Finno-Ugric languages.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been looking into those separately on my own in like the linguistics world and have been keeping it separate from my conlang. But other than that, I'm really interested in linguistics in like the fields of syntax and semantics and like language acquisition, as a lot of people are, and sociolinguistics. Those are kind of my four fields that I kind of like. I'm not trying to choose one right now, because I know once you get to like grad school and stuff, you have to choose thing. But I'm kind of looking into those right now. I like how things, how words work together and how they have like their meanings in the words.
Interesting. Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Nick, what about you? Or Tommy, I mean, whoa, my bad.
Okay,
we're
so
all
I guess
interchangeable here, don't worry.
Okay, so I guess it's my turn then. Well, I guess that it all started when I was in seventh grade. It's when in seventh grade I had to, like, it was, we had to take French and Spanish, the school that I went to, and so we would have to take like half, like us, one semester of French, one semester of Spanish, and I really liked French and Spanish was all right. I wasn't as good at Spanish as I was at French, or at least I wasn't as interested. And then also around that same time period, I started getting, I was always interested in Asia. And I think that the reason why I first started becoming interested in it was just because of how different their culture was. So then I ended up starting to learn Japanese. And when I say learn, I mean like basically like fool around with it and not really learn it until like 2 years later. But after starting that and keeping with French, because the following year I continued learning French in school, but I stopped learning Spanish. And then I just continued with that. And as like the years progress, I just became more interested in other languages and I would start researching just not like one area, just like a bunch of different languages, whether it be Chinese, Japanese, Korean, or whether it be Russian, Polish, whatever, Spanish, Portuguese, everything. I was just interested in language in general. And then after sort of attempting to learn the basics of a few different kinds, there was at one point I was trying to study Swedish, and another time I was trying to study Polish, but none of those really kept going. Although I did keep with French and Japanese up until now. Those are one of my two like languages that I've kept with this whole time. But yeah, I don't know. As for conlanging, I honestly don't remember when or how I got into it. Like, I'm trying to think, like, I can't exactly remember my first one or a specific time period where I started doing it. But in the beginning, what I do remember is that my conlangs were very, very English-based. But that's because I had no idea what I was doing at the same time. I just thought it was really interesting. And for me, it's, whenever I tell people this, they always think that I'm crazy. Because I'm horrible at art. I have no artistic ability at all. And I feel like this is my way of showing my artistic side, sort of. And also, I kind of feel in control, because like whenever I learn like a language, there's always irregularities. There's always things that you can't, you just have to learn from experience rather than have someone explain it to you, be like, oh, okay. Like there's just some parts of it. But when I create it, I feel in control and I feel like I'm making all the rules. If there's any irregularities, I'm making it up. If there's any craziness in it, I'm making it up. So I'll be able to understand it. But as of right now, the one that I'm continuing to make is called Hjovantor. And I've actually used this name, and I wouldn't say that it really has evolved, but more than I just liked the name of the language. So I just kept it, and would, because I would always create, I would always come up with like a phonology and orthography for my conlang, and then I just forget about it. And so I'd always do that because, like, my favorite parts about linguistics is I really like sociolinguistics, and I'm really interested in phonology and syntax and more, morphology. And, yeah, I don't know. I'm just really interested about how many different sounds that the human mouth can produce. And so I always, every time that, because sometimes I'll just make up, like, a different phonemic inventory for a potential conlang. And, like, I always try to use different sounds and try to not stick to a certain thing. Like, I'll try to go all across the board, use all different kinds of sounds. But, yeah. As for what I'm learning now and my background with languages in my family, no one in my family really speaks anything besides English. I'm the only polylingual person in my family, I think. My grandpa does, or at least did, speak Yiddish because my father's side of the family is Jewish. And I know that my dad knows a little bit of Hebrew, but I don't know anything because I wasn't really raised Jewish. But so I don't know where it really came from. There was no one in my family that really inspired me, or I'm not really sure where it came from. But as of right now, the languages that I continued to learn up until now are French, Japanese, Korean, and I started Chinese in August. So I've only been learning that for a little bit.
So we got people with experience all across the board. You got me with the Romance, you with the East Asian, and, well, Chinese isn't really in that group, is it?
Well, Chinese, a lot of people mistake, like, thinking Chinese, Japanese, Korean grammars all alike, but Chinese grammar is completely different from Japanese and Korean. However, Japanese and Korean are very, very similar. Yeah, although, with some of the vocabulary in all three of the languages, you can see how some words match up. For example, one example that I can think of where it sort of sounds the same is the word for time or hour. In Japanese, it's jikan, and in Korean, it's shigan, and in Chinese, it's shijian. So it's sort of similar.
But that might be a case of a loan word, though.
Yeah, but there are a lot of, because a lot of Korean and Japanese vocabulary is borrowed from Chinese. However, the grammar is completely, completely different. Right. Whereas, like, Chinese has, like, SVO order. Japanese and Korean has, in general, SOV order. And there's a lot of things that, in my personal opinion, studying all three of them, Chinese, while it's the hardest to write, it's the easiest to learn the grammar, in my opinion.
Even though you have to deal with the tones?
Yeah, I personally really enjoy the tones. I'm really interested in, eventually, once I'm comfortable with Mandarin better, probably in a few years, I might want to take up learning Cantonese. But I know that Cantonese has more tones than Mandarin, and it's, I don't know, it's weird. But even more so than Cantonese, I'm interested in Vietnamese, and Vietnamese has 6 tones.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a very nasally language, and it's, I don't know why I like it, but I really do. And
do we ever know why we like a language?
I guess I just like the sound of it.
That'd be an interesting, like, grad study. I don't know if they have studies on that, like loan words between Chinese, Japanese, and Korean, Vietnamese.
It's probably been done.
I'm sure it has. But how the languages without tones adapt words with tones? That could be an interesting,
yeah,
interesting study.
And now somebody who listens to this is going to take that.
Right. Hopefully we see it. Well, I think that covers pretty much everything we wanted to cover in this podcast. Anything else you guys are thinking of?
Oh, I had something that I wanted to say. I can't remember it, though. something when he was talking about different phonologies. Oh, yes, I do remember. So, how Tommy was always taking different phonologies and making them up and forgetting about them. That is me with my print writing system right there. I've had cursive for the longest time, but print I can just never remember or figure it out. I don't know why. It's kind of backwards in that way, because most people think, okay, you're going to have the print, and then you're going to make cursive. No.
We're just talking conscript, right? Not like
conscript, yes, conscript. But still.
Yeah. Well, it's been about half an hour, a little over. So if you're still listening, thank you very much. You are a great reader, listener to our blog. I think you deserve applause, actually.
A good applause.
That was deep.
Yeah. Thank you, though, for tuning in to the first introductory podcast.
Next time, we promise it will be much more interesting.
Yeah and much more hopefully too. Shorter too.
Right.
Well, half hour seems pretty standard.
Yeah. But it's hard to like sit down and listen to it for like a half hour. Right. I feel like we rambled a lot, but it happens.
Yeah, but I will. Well, we will. See you on the next edition of the Deconstructed Construction Podcast. Thanks for listening.